Good evening and welcome to News Views. My name's Garland Nixon. We're here from 5 to 6 p.m. and we're going to be addressing current news issues. Today we will be talking about the fiscal cliff. I'm going to have an interesting panel today. In studio, we have Mark Levine. Mark Levine will be a very valuable panelist. Mr. Levine has a degree in economics from Harvard University and a law degree from Yale, so he'll be able to explain the fiscal cliff to us quite well.
Plus, I used to work in Congress, so I know how those people think as well.
Yes, so he'll be a very valuable part of this conversation. Today, we're going to have Donna Edwards. We're going to have call in. We're going to have Chris Van Hollen.
The Honorable Chris Van Hollen. The Honorable Don Edwards, yes. Since they're both members of Congress.
Yes, and they will be touching base with us for a while. They're going to both call in. We're also going to have the Honorable Roger Mano, who is a state senator in Maryland. And Senator Mano worked on a number of bills to address fiscal issues in Maryland. They came up with some creative, progressive ways. For those of you who don't know, Maryland happens to be just about the most progressive state in the union, the wealthiest state in the union, the highest educated state in the union.
The wealthiest?
Yes, it is.
Maryland has more money than New York or Massachusetts?
Per capita, per person.
Really?
Yeah, per earnings. Okay. So it's a very successful state, and Senator Mano has been a big part of that, and I think he's going to be able to address that. Let's start off by doing this. About 10 after, we're going to go, ideally, if the Honorable Don Edwards is available by then, we'll have her on the air, and we're going to, of course, start talking about our subject. But before then, I'd like to remind everyone here that this is WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., and we are a listener-supported station. We're going to have great guests on NewsView. I'm going to enjoy it. Mark, certainly, I'm sure, will enjoy it, and I am sure you will, too. We've got a number of wonderful guest lined up.
And we're going to be here every Friday at 5. So yes. You'll remember as you're driving home and avoiding hopefully that accident that Gloria talked about to tune in to WPFW and be patient through the traffic and listen to Garland and me and our terrific guests.
Yes, and you know, ideally I'm sure there will be times when we'll have we'll talk about issues that are, you know, maybe not so upbeat, but we're going to try to do the best we can to deliver the information to you, deliver the latest news, and to have people who have their finger on the pulse of these issues. So rather than just get, you know, indiscriminate opinions from us, you'll have people who are involved. Certainly, Congressman Van Hollen is being the ranking member on the Budget Committee, I'm sure is in the mix today, and maybe we can get some of the latest information. For those of you who don't know, in Maryland, the fiscal cliff is a particularly significant issue because they're looking at possibly the loss of between 50 and 90,000 jobs in the event that we go over the fiscal cliff.
Garland, why don't we tell people what the fiscal cliff is? Because it's a metaphor. People use it all the time, yes. Fiscal cliff, but a lot of people really don't know what it is, and let's be very careful.
Let's start off.
Explain what we're talking about here.
Yes, so for those of you who hear fiscal cliff, we're gonna have a Congressman Edwards on in about five more minutes or so, but Mark here is going to explain in layman's terms the fiscal cliff. What is it?
Okay, it's a lot of things coming together, all of which begin January 1st, 2013, so they expire at the end of, well, just a few weeks from now, December 31st. And they're all there for different reasons, and they all come from different places. There's a long history for each of them. But the main thing that people are arguing about right now is the expiration of the Bush tax cuts and the Obama tax cuts. Mm-hmm. Now, you'll recall that George Bush gave a very, very massive tax cut to super rich people, and he also gave a smaller tax cut, but still a significant one, to middle-class families. Mm-hmm. It was good for only 10 years because they didn't have 60 votes in the Senate, so they had to use the reconciliation process, which mm-hmm. is a complex way of saying that it had to expire after only 10 years. Then, so that's the main thing that he's arguing about with Republicans. The Republicans want to make sure the rich people get these special big tax breaks, and Obama wants to make sure the other 98% of us, those that earn under $250,000, get our tax breaks. So that's the biggest argument. But there's a lot of other parts to the fiscal cliff. Unemployment insurance mm-hmm. ends at the end of this year, unless something is done about it. The alternative minimum tax goes up. The AMT, which hits a lot of middle-class families these days.
Payroll tax.
That goes up. Payroll taxes, yes, that's another one. That President Obama cut down to 4.2%, mm-hmm. it goes back up to 6.2%. And that's just on the revenue, the tax side. On the spending side, Congress has to cut about $1 trillion, a little bit more, over 10 years, so about $100 billion a year, half of which in defense, half of which in domestic discretionary programs. How we got here is interesting. It has to do with the compromise that President Obama made a year and a half ago when the Republicans threatened to default on the national debt. There's a whole story, long story there.
Yes.
But the heart of it is this is something where they're going to cut tax. They're going to raise taxes and cut spending.
Yeah.
And that's not good for an economy that's in recession. So most of us want to end the fiscal cliff, but the question is, how do you do it? Republicans say tax the middle class and cut Social Security and cut Medicare. Democrats say tax the rich and leave Social Security and Medicare alone. And right now they're in an impasse.
Yes. Clearly the issue of fiscal cliff is not just about one thing. The reason they're calling it a cliff is because if, let's name them, Mark, payroll taxes go up, alternative minimum taxes go up.
Income taxes go up. Unemployment insurance ends. And government spending goes down on both domestic programs and military.
Great. Now, the Honorable Donna Edwards is on the phone, and we'd like to welcome Congresswoman Edwards to News Views. Good afternoon and welcome to News Views, Congressman Edwards.
Hi, it's good to be with you.
Great. Well, we're talking about the fiscal cliff and
Is anybody talking about anything else?
I don't know. This is Washington, D.C. Is there anything else going on?
Yeah. Well, we had an accident around the corner where someone ran into a McDonald's.
We talked about that for about five minutes,
but right. Not much else. And, of course, being from Maryland, one of the things we brought up was that in the event that we go over the fiscal cliff, it could have very dire consequences for your constituents particularly.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, hanging in the balance of this discussion are the status of our federal employee, our federal workforce. Of course, in Prince George's County, that's about 140,000 workers all around the metropolitan Washington region. It's about 700,000 workers. And in addition to the federal workforce or the contractor workforce that depend on their contracts with the federal government. And so there's a lot at stake, and I think already some of our managers at agencies around the metropolitan region are, you know, getting together their plans for what to do beginning on January 2nd. And so this is really important for the American people. It's particularly important for the people who live in the metropolitan Washington region.
Well, thank you very much. Now, one of the issues, of course, being what's going on significantly in the House with John Boehner, whether or not he's able to deliver some of what some would consider the more extreme members of his party. And the question is out there, ultimately, will John Boehner be able to get the numbers? Will they be able to gather the numbers to put together any kind of deal in the House? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, let me just say, first of all, the Speaker's goal should not be to deliver the extremes of his party. It should be to deliver the middle and to work with Democrats to deliver a majority, not to go over this cliff. I think that is possible. I think the President has actually laid out a pathway, and of course, the Speaker has put out what he describes as a counter proposal. It's really not a lot more than what they've proposed over the last couple of years. But in any case, I think it means that we are actually at a point where the President and the Speaker, and of course, working with Democrats, because Democrats are going to deliver the votes for this. I mean, if what happened during the debt ceiling negotiations last year is any indication, it's going to take an overwhelming majority of Democrats to deliver with Speaker Boehner's, a couple of dozen or, a few dozen Republicans. That's going to be the deal. And the deal will be, I think we got to raise raise tax rates, going up to the Clinton-era tax rates, removing the tax breaks for the upper income, tax cuts for upper income levels. And keep in mind, people would still get 100% of American taxpayers would receive a tax cut on $250,000 of their income. It's just on $250,001 that the tax would begin.
And that's interesting because, of course, that's the main point of disagreement between Democrats and Republicans. This is Mark Levine, Congressman Edwards. The Republicans seem to be betting everything, not on the defense cuts, not on unemployment insurance, not on payroll taxes, not on the 98% of us that make under $250,000. But their argument is that people who make over $250,000, even though President Obama would give them a tax cut, it's about $12,000. That's a significant chunk of change for both of us, that it's not enough, that they have to continue with a much larger tax cut. government. And some say that they're willing to go over the cliff if the Democrats don't budge on that. It seems to me that given that option and given what President Obama ran on and the fact that the vast majority of Americans support raising taxes on the rich, that if they insist on that, maybe going off the cliff would not be as bad as agreeing to them. What do you think?
Well, I don't know what they're thinking because, first of all, you know, in the president's election, you can say a lot of things about this election cycle, but one of the things that you can say in particular is that the president ran on ending tax cuts for income over $250,000. The American people spoke on that. They voted on that. It's what they expect of this president. Now, if you know, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle want to go all over the cliff, that means all the tax cuts expire for everybody. I actually think I don't want to do that. I don't think it's smart to do that. But I think that actually puts the president in a much better bargaining position because then he's saying, all he's saying is, you know, Republicans, you just got to vote on restoring tax cuts for 98% of Americans. I don't think we should do that, though, because I think it's important for us to settle this agenda so that the international and domestic markets have some stability, so that we go into the new year growing more jobs, even more jobs than, you know, we know that we've grown over the last, you know, some odd months, including this last month where the economy grew almost 147,000 new jobs, even in the face of this garbage. So I don't think that Republicans are going to be in a better position if we go over the cliff. At the same time, you know, I think their best bet is to cut the deal now with the president.
Thank you. I have some numbers right here from Politico. 146,000 new jobs, over 146,000 new jobs, and the unemployment rate is at a 47-month low of 7.7%. Washington Post polls today, 73% of Democrats support a tax hike on the rich, including a majority, 57% who strongly support them. Among independents, 63% back an increase. What are you hearing? The numbers are overwhelming when you look at the mass, the majority of Americans. What are you hearing from your constituents about this fiscal cliff and about what needs to be done to fix it?
You know, I was out today actually at a meeting of ethnic chambers of commerce, African American chamber, Asian chamber, Hispanic chamber, and you know what they were saying to me? Go over the cliff. Because they know, even as small business people, that the vast majority of them fall under the $250,000. And so I don't know who Republicans are advocating for. You know, it really is a strange combination when you have 73% of Americans who really support the president's agenda, and that's Republicans and Democrats, because to get to 73%, that's a lot of Americans. But, you know, look, at the end of the day, we've got to raise revenue. We know we have to do that. We could actually even be having a much more robust economic recovery if we raised additional revenue, put that into the investments that the president has said with respect to transportation and infrastructure, job creation, investments in education. And that would actually help to reduce the deficit, because the more people you have, more people you have working, the more people who are paying taxes. So, you know, I don't think Republicans have very far to go out on this, but they want to go out on that limb. It's probably going to break off.
Well, let me talk about that limb, Congressman Edwards, because Republicans say that they're willing to pay some revenues if we cut back on entitlements, which means, of course, Social Security, Medicare, maybe Medicaid. So far, the president is holding firm, but some of us on the left side are concerned the president may give in. And I always point out, you know, Social Security and Medicare are funded separately. If people who pay what is really a regressive tax, because, as you know, we all pay it up to $113,000, but after that, a millionaire might pay less than 1% of their income in Social Security or Medicare taxes. If we use Social Security and Medicare surpluses to support the budget, in effect, you have poor people subsidizing rich people, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And let's be clear, Social Security doesn't have one single nickel to do with the deficits and our long-term debt. Not one single thing. I don't even think it should be part of this negotiation or part of this consideration. If we want to extend Social Security solvency, we can have that discussion later on, and let's send it out into the out years. We could lift the cap. There are plenty of other things that we can do. On Medicare, you know, keep in mind that we actually have Medicare savings, $716 billion of Medicare savings that were built into the Affordable Care Act. And so, you know, the Republicans on one hand say we want to deal with, you know, with Medicare solvency, but on the other hand, we want to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Well, if you repeal the Affordable Care Act, you actually end up raising, you know, our deficits and our long-term debt. So that's not going to work either. I happen to believe that, you know, we've already taken a lot out of savings on Medicare. We don't want to reduce benefits or benefits around Social Security, but we need to raise revenues, go back to the Clinton-era tax rates. That raises a boatload of revenue. If we want to, you know, down the line deal with tax reform, I'm all for that. But there's only so much savings that you're going to get, even if you were to repeal every single loophole and deduction that there is. We still need to do some of them, obviously. There's a clean pathway forward, and I think Republicans are simply going to have to, you know, sort of bite the dust in order to get this done for the American people, and it won't be that painful in the end because the vast majority of the American people support this agenda.
Thank you. Once again, for our listeners, you're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM. My name's Garland Nixon, and I'm on every Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. The show is News Views. Today, I'm here today with my panelists to the right, Mark Levine, and the Honorable Donna Edwards, Congresswoman from Maryland. Another question. I read an interesting article today where the issue of intransigence and negotiation was discussed. During the last 4 years, on several occasions, the Republican Party took a stand and basically held the stand and wouldn't move, and eventually the Democrats to some extent, there was a feeling that the Democrats gave in or caved or however you want to describe it. This article addressed the issue of intransigence and long-term negotiation as to this issue kind of setting an example of how negotiation was going to go for the next 4 years, whether the Republicans were going to pretty much take hostages and stand their ground, and whether the Democrats were going to cave, or whether this time they were going to hold solid. What are your thoughts on that issue?
Well, I know that my constituents, and I think that this is true across the country, they want us to figure out a way that we can work together on solving the nation's problems. And people want that kind of leadership. I think what we're seeing from the president right now is a recognition of his strength coming out of the election. A lot of folks like to describe this as a close election, but if you really look at the numbers, it wasn't close at all. And so I think that the American people spoke. They want the president to demonstrate his leadership. They want him to do that by being aggressive in these negotiations. And I am liking what I'm seeing out of President Obama right now in these negotiations. I think it's going to, you know, stand us all very well, you know, through the end. And there's no harm in standing your ground for the right thing. And I think the president understands the places where it's going to be important to give. I understand that, and I'm, you know, over on the left side of the spectrum. But I know that we've got to come to a point where we settle things for the American people so that we don't go over a fiscal cliff, so that we deal with, you know, the pressing problems that we have. I see it happening.
Congresswoman, one of the things I think that people on the left are concerned of, yes, President Obama is looking great right now. His rhetoric is fine. I have no problem with anything he's saying right now. But I think the fear is that when push comes to shove and Congress is 2 days away from its Christmas, its holiday break, which we all know Congress loves its holiday break. They're not going to miss going home for the last week of December, that President Obama might cave. What are your thoughts?
Well, look, I think that a negotiation is just what it says. It means that some people are going to get some of what they want, and other people are going to get something of what they want. I think I fully expect that, too. And the question is whether we can do the right thing for the American people. And so I believe that, you know, the president needs to negotiate really hard, and he needs to also look to his left, if you will, to make sure that he's honoring the promise and the commitment that he made during the election, but still gets a deal done. And again, I think it's possible to do that. And I like the way that he is negotiating now. I had some, you know, issues with that, you know, with some of our negotiating posture before, not necessarily with the president. But, you know, wanting him to be a little stronger and tighter in those. And I think, you know, to his credit, he was trying to reach out across the aisle and was having his hand slapped back every time. I think we're in a really different position now. The president recognizes his strength. He's not going to overplay his hand, and we're going to get some of what we want, and they're going to get some of what they want, and that's called a deal.
Well, thank you very much, Congressman Edwards. We certainly appreciate it. We're going next to Congressman Van Hollen. We have him on the line next, and we certainly appreciate your input, and we hope to have you back on the show again sometime soon.
Thank you. Look forward to it.
Thank you. We have coming up next Maryland Congressman Chris Van Hollen. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome to NewsView.
Garland, it's great to be with you, and are you there with Roger?
Roger will be on a bit after you, sir. I'm here with Mark Levine, who is a panelist. And,
sure.
And
hey, Mark.
He's my resident expert on the economy and on economic issues and the constitutional law. But all that being said, sir, the questions are out there about the fiscal cliff. Do you have anything new to tell us or anything of significance?
First of all, I think we should just make clear that Congressman Van Hollen is the ranking Democrat, right, on the Budget Committee. You are the antithesis of Paul Ryan. Am I right there?
Well, that's right, in the sense that we are opposite parties on the Budget Committee in the House, and I did have the honor of playing the role of Paul Ryan in the debate prep for Vice President Biden.
You did a good job, because the President.
Thank you.
Vice President did a good job.
I've been totally deprogrammed, however.
Let's only hope that he didn't beat you up quite as bad as he beat up Paul Ryan.
So, well, you know, it's one of the few opportunities you have to beat up on the Vice President and be thanked for it in a mock debate.
<That's true. laughs>
Thank you. So is there any news? Where are we right now in the budget debate? Is anything going on now today that we didn't know yesterday?
Well, as you know, the president had a phone conversation with Speaker Boehner, and that's the good news. It came after the president has already, you know, presented a very detailed plan to congressional Republicans based on everything he told the American people during the last election. Speaker Boehner he responded with something on a piece of paper. It's hard to call it a plan because it was very. It contained very few details, but look, there are conversations that are going on. Whether or not we're able to reach agreement by the end of this month remains unknown. I think there's a better than 50% chance that we will, but that depends on Republicans coming around to the point of view of one of their own colleagues in the House, Tom Cole, a conservative Republican from Oklahoma, who sees the handwriting on the wall and recognizes that it's simply untenable for the Republicans to tell the American people that everybody's taxes are going to go up in order to protect bonus tax breaks for folks at the very top of the income ladder.
We have an article here from the Christian Science Monitor here on News Views. We usually review a number of articles. There's a new poll showing that President Obama has his highest approval rating since the killing of Osama bin Laden. We've got the jobs numbers coming in with 146 to 147,000 jobs. What are your thoughts on the president's approval rating and the strength of the Democratic Party and how that affects the leverage?
And let me throw in one more poll before you answer, Congressman, and that is that there was a poll taken that said that 53% of Americans, if we go over the fiscal cliff, will blame Republicans, and only 27% will blame Democrats.
So what are your thoughts on the leverage involved here with these various issues?
Well, I think the combination of all of these polls, along with the exit polling done election day, shows that the president is on very strong grounds, both politically and on the matter of this specific policy, of his approach to the budget question, on his approach to jobs, on his approach to the deficit, meaning that the American people overwhelmingly support the idea that you can only address our long-term deficits through a combination of cuts, which the president has already put into place over 10 years, and revenue. And so I guess bottom line, the American people are on the president's side. I think wiser Republican heads realize that, and they recognize that it's really important that they reach an agreement. Otherwise, they will face very severe negative political consequences, as well as the the terrible repercussions for the economy.
It seems like it's a game of chicken, Congressman. And whereas a year and a half ago, President Obama swerved the car, as it were, because he didn't want to default on the national debt, which would have been a huge crisis, that the fiscal cliff isn't a crisis of that level. Maybe it's a fiscal slope. It's not good for the economy, to be sure, but it's not like, you know, 10 years or even 1 year of taxes and revenues happens the day after, you know, January 2nd. This is a slow process that we could actually afford to go over the fiscal cliff for a little while, if only to persuade the Republicans to come to reason here.
Well, listen, you raise a good point. I want to be clear. I think it would be a mistake to go over the fiscal cliff. However, you're exactly right. It's a very different kind of situation economically than defaulting on your national debt. If the United States were ever to wake up someday and decide that we're going to default on our bills, not pay our debts, you would see catastrophic consequences for our economy and indeed the international economy. So this is a very different beast we're dealing with in the fiscal cliff. It's not irretrievable if you go over it. In other words, if you go off the cliff, it doesn't mean you automatically are going to hit the bottom. There are a number of off ramps. Let me again stress, however, that it would be much better to get an agreement that avoided the fiscal cliff, so long as that agreement contained the priorities that President has emphasized.
Well, there has been some talk about a piecemeal agreement where certain things are agreed on, for instance, the tax cuts. A Washington Post article today mentioned that Republican Tom Cole urged the Republicans to take a deal on the Bush tax cuts only and then work things out otherwise afterwards. What are your thoughts on a piecemeal deal such as that?
Well, I think it would be better to resolve all these issues as part of a package, meaning that we extend middle-class tax cuts, but we also come to agreement that there won't be a lot of huffing and puffing over raising the debt ceiling, because, as you know, we probably face another issue over the debt ceiling end of January, February. You know, maybe it can be managed until March, but it makes no sense to, you know, go through a huge sort of political battle now, only to turn around and face those uncertainties again. So we're all better off if we can get an agreement, and when I say all of us, I mean the country. However, I go back to my earlier point. That's all premised on a hope and a belief that Republicans will see the huge political risks they would be taking on, which we just talked about, if they really decide to threaten the economy and insist on middle-class tax rates going up, all in order to preserve these bonus breaks for the folks at the top.
Congressman Van Hollen, I always carry my Constitution with me, and because I'm very concerned about the United States defaulting on the national debt, far more concerned about that than the fiscal cliff, which doesn't bother me as much, I just want to remind you, I know you know it, Section 4 of the 14th Amendment says the validity of the public debt of the United States, authorized by law, shall not be questioned. Please, when you talk with the President, I hope you remind him of that provision of the Constitution, because I don't think we should be held hostage to Republicans refusing to pay our debts.
Well, I haven't done my own thorough analysis of that provision of the Constitution. What I do know is that just yesterday, the White House indicated that they did not believe that the Constitution gave them the ability to unilaterally raise the debt. I don't know whether that's right as a matter of constitutional law or not. But what's relevant here is that the White House, again, within the last 24 hours, have said that they don't intend to apply that kind of interpretation to the Constitution. So I'm not sure they should have come out and said that.
If push comes to shove, it may be necessary, is my fear. But we can cross that bridge if we get there.
That's right.
Another important question that I feel I must ask, the exact same question I asked Congresswoman Edwards, is what are you hearing from your constituents? What are you hearing in emails or faxes or phone calls or other means of contact?
Well, what I'm hearing is pretty consistent with, you know, what we're talking about here, which is that our constituents want to avoid the fiscal cliff, but they want to do it in a way that, number one, includes the jobs initiatives that the president's put forward, that ensures that we extend middle-class tax cuts and that we take a balanced approach to long-term deficit reduction. So, yes, they definitely want to avoid going over the fiscal cliff, but they want to do it in a way that's consistent with the priorities the president laid out in his campaign and since his campaign.
Well, I'd certainly like to thank you on behalf of the News Views, on behalf of myself and Mark here, and certainly on behalf of WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. And we hope that sometime again soon, maybe we can get you back on to update us again.
Keep fighting.
Thanks to you and Mark, and thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. Next, you are listening to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. We've just spoke with Congresswoman Donna Edwards. We've spoken with the Congressman Chris Van Hollen. And now we have Senator Roger Manoh from Maryland, a progressive senator who has been deeply involved in similar issues and negotiations within the state of Maryland, dealing with budget issues, dealing with revenue issues. And we'd like to get get his take on this. Are you there, Senator Manoh?
Hey, Garland. Hey, Mark. How you guys doing?
Hey there.
Wonderful. Great to have you here on News Views. So the question we throw out there is: Maryland had some revenue issues. Maryland had some issues with taxes and with how they were going to raise the revenue and deal with deficits. What types of things would you say that you've done in Maryland that could possibly translate into federal policy?
Well, first of all, we're in the same situation that every other state in the nation is in terms of being in a recession. But Maryland made some very, very bold investments many years ago that have been challenging to deal with. But we've reconciled them in a bipartisan way, and namely our record investment in K-12 education. Many years ago, actually, when Congressman Van Hollen was in the state Senate, actually in the same office that I'm in, the Thornton Bridge Excellence Education funding formula was put into place. And that funding formula guarantees an adequate and equitable education for every kid in the state, regardless of where they live. It has put Maryland on a trajectory to what it is today, the best K-12 school system state in the nation 4 years in a row. But it was very expensive. That education funding formula, which we've just recently begun paying for, and the tech bubble, put us in a tough situation going into the recession. And so what we had to do is come together in the last couple of years and make some very tough collaborative decisions as to how we were going to continue to fund K-12 education at a record level, if we were going to, which we have. And what we came up with was a bipartisan plan to raise taxes in a progressive way, which we did this last year in 2012. That was my bill. It was called the State and Local Government Revenue and Financing Act. And we also made some investments in our gaming sector, so our gaming dollars weren't blowing out of Maryland into other states, and that's brought in tens of millions of dollars. And we've also made strategic cuts, which have been very, very difficult to deal with, but we've done them in a way that's preserved our social safety net and our core functions and our core priorities as Democrats and Republicans.
Senator Manoh, one of the things that seemed to be of concern in the last couple of years is that the federal government was giving less aid to the states, that in a time of recession, the federal government can print money, but states have to balance their budgets. And so in a time of recession, your tax receipts going in are less and your payments going out for unemployment benefits and other benefits that are based on need go up. And so is this something where states like Maryland could use more federal aid?
Well, sure. Mark, you'll remember when you and I worked on the Hill.
I certainly do.
Yeah,
it's very hard calling you Senator
Manoh. We were able to print money, but
right.
States like Maryland require a balanced budget every year, and balancing the budget in a time of you know, increasing needs in the social safety net, and decreasing funds from the federal government, the stimulus dollars specifically, which have expired, have created this, you know, very difficult challenge, for states. And Maryland is, I would argue, disproportionately affected by sequestration, the so-called fiscal cliff that, the members of Congress just spoke about, largely because of our proximity to the District of Columbia. We're right on that border. We have, as Donna, Congresswoman Edwards mentioned before, we have a huge number of federal employees and federal retirees right in the D.C. metro region, which is the large, large center of political gravity, as this recent election last month, you know, has advised us. And so we are, you know, in a sort of holding pattern. We can't really advance our budget for fiscal year 14, which is the budget that we'll take up in January, until we have some sense as to what's coming down the pipeline with the federal government. Now, having said that, Congressman Van Hollen, the ranking member on the Budget Committee, you know, there's really nobody who I'd rather see, you know, guiding the Democrats and the Republicans through that process than Congressman Van Hollen. Congressman Hoyer is phenomenal. Congresswoman Donna Edwards. We've got a great farm team. Our newest member of Congress, John Delaney from the 6th Congressional District. We've got a great farm team fighting for us. But if we don't come together, if Democrats and Republicans under the president's leadership don't come together, Maryland will be in for some very, very deep, deep challenges. I think Congresswoman Edwards mentioned before, we're talking 50 to 90,000 jobs in the state of Maryland. That's something that we just can't allow to happen, and we really don't have a plan B, something like that, if it were to happen.
Senator Mano, certainly the political dynamics are different in Maryland than they are in the U.S. Congress. But one of the platforms, I recall one of the part of your platform was specifically working together. Do you have any advice, or can you tell us things that you did to work? Because certainly being on the progressive wing of the party, I'm sure there was some strain between the progressive wing of the party, the mainstream wing of the party, and Republicans on the other side. How do you get past the intransigence at time to at times to actually get that done? Because working together sounds great, but it's often difficult. How do you get around that? How do you actually get something done?
Oh, geez. I guess it's a dialogue, and it's about relationships and trust, and being open-minded and flexible and trying new things. I think we're blessed in Maryland. We've got three great leaders, the President of the Senate, Mike Miller, the Speaker of the House, Mike Bush, the Governor, Martin O'Malley, who just showed us this past election what folks can do when they work together. You know, we had very contentious budget negotiations last year, a very contentious revenue bill that I mentioned before. We dealt with social issues of huge importance to our state, in-state tuition, the DREAM Act, marriage equality, the gaming issue. Those are very, very, very contentious issues. And we managed to come together, pass those bills. They were petitioned to the ballot by Republicans, and Democrats and Republicans rejected, those efforts to stop those legislative initiatives, because, you know, in the long run, folks understood that they were about compromise and about what's best for the state of Maryland.
And let me offer my personal congratulations on all three of those initiatives. I really think it wasn't, obviously, the people of Maryland deserve their congratulations for the election, but I think the legislators of Maryland really took some courageous stands, both for marriage equality and for the DREAM Act, things that were very controversial nationwide, and Maryland took a stand, and people like you, Roger, you've come a long way since we worked together on the Judiciary Committee. I'm very proud of you and your colleagues.
Those were great days.
They were great days.
Then, but I appreciate that. I mean, it really was a team effort. We cobbled together the votes. We had to take a couple of runs at marriage, several actually, every year that I've been in the legislature, I've put that bill in with other like-minded legislators, but it's taken us, you know, 6 years to get it out, and we became the first state in America to reject a referendum to repeal the marriage equality effort that the legislature passed. No other state had ever done that. As you know, several states were successful on election night last month.
I think you tied with Washington
Act
State,
is, right? About fairness and kids and communities and giving, you know, opportunities and leveling the playing field for everyone. And it gets back to that sort of record investment that we've made in K-12 education and in our people. We didn't become the wealthiest state in the nation per capita by accident. We didn't have the lowest poverty in America by accident. Let me just, a few more stats that just roll off my lips that are extraordinary. You know, we have the highest number of advanced degrees in America. We've got, you know, the highest record number in Maryland and in the nation of minorities participating in the procurement process. These are investments that we've made. They reflect our values. And Maryland's a diverse state. We are not totally a Democratic state. We've got many Republicans and many, many, many independents and Democrats from across the spectrum. But on the core issues that really matter, what is our community going to look like, not next year's budget, but 30, 40 years from now, we've been able to collaborate and to sit down in Annapolis for 90 days and sometimes in special session. And I'm a Democrat, you know, progressive Democrat from Montgomery County, but I can sit down with a George Edwards from Western Maryland, who's a Republican, or a Jim Mathias from the Eastern Shore, who's a conservative Democrat, and you know, figure out a blueprint for the state of Maryland that allows us to move forward and to build the infrastructure and make the investments that we need to keep the state great. And the results speak for themselves.
Well, certainly we're talking about the fiscal cliff, but since we have you on here, we'd certainly like to take advantage of that by asking you about the DREAM Act in Maryland. There are a number of people listening to this show who may hear about the DREAM Act and about the federal questions about whether or not it can eventually be enacted through Congress. What is the DREAM Act in Maryland? What does it consist of? What can happen now that couldn't happen before?
Well, the DREAM Act in the Maryland DREAM Act is a direct response of the failure of Congress to actually move anything substantial in terms of immigration reform. Mark, you remember when I worked as senior counsel to the ranking member on the Immigration Subcommittee.
I certainly do. Congresswoman Jackson.
We've been dealing with immigration issues for decades. And what we simply did in Maryland is allow for children who, for no fault of their own, were brought to this country. Their parents may not have been documented. The children, of course, were not documented. And because of the requirement that a federal requirement that every state provide an education for a child who is on U.S. soil, Maryland educates those kids, and then specifically in the case of Maryland, sends those kids for up to 12 years through the number one K-12 public education system in America. However, there's no requirement that we give them any opportunities for college.
There wasn't a requirement.
What had happened was that the rug was pulled out from under these kids. They live in our communities. And we said, look, if you are one of these children, if your parents or you have paid your taxes, if you have registered with Selective Service, a whole host of criteria, sort of hoops to jump through, then we will give you the same higher educational opportunities that are available to every other child in the state of Maryland. I think that was the right thing to do. I think it was the fair thing to do. I'm extremely proud of the fact that we did it. And let me just tell you a very short story. The day before Election Day, when we were unsure whether the DREAM Act was going to pass, and as we now know, it passed overwhelmingly statewide because it was about kids, I met with a group of kids, Dreamers, who walked from California to Maryland.
Wow.
It took them 8 months to make the point of why the DREAM Act is so important, and that these are beautiful, ambitious, talented, wonderful U.S. citizens participating. In the case of Maryland, these are Maryland citizens participating in our economy, and all they want is a fair shot at getting an education so they can be, you know, legal taxpaying citizens. And I am so proud that we were able to do that for them, not just for them, but for us, because that bill is about all of us.
It really is, because this country, we always forget, but you know, all of us, most of us here are descendants of immigrants or descendants of slaves, but we're descendants of people who were not born on this continent. And of course, every generation provides people who contribute far, far and above what America gives them, they give back. And I think this next generation is definitely part of that.
Yeah, and you are from Montgomery County, and I understand there's a very high population of Latinos in Montgomery County at this time, growing.
Yes, yes.
And so we certainly appreciate you coming on. We hope you to be a friend of the show, and we certainly we're going to have many other various issues which you specialize in, and we're certainly going to ask you to come back and maybe come in and sit down with Mark and I and be part of our panel sometime soon.
Be good to see you again.
I appreciate it. I really do.
Thank you.
It's a great show, and it's great to talk to you guys again. Mark, hope everything's going well.
It is. It is. Thank you for asking.
Sure.
Thank you. You are listening to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. My name's Garland Nixon, and this is News Views. I'm here with my panelist,
Mark Levine,
and our other panelists. We had quite of an impressive group on our panel today.
We have.
We've had Donna, Congresswoman, the Honorable Donna Edwards. We've had the ranking member of the Budget Committee, Congressman Chris Van Hollen. We've had Senator Roger Mano from the state of Maryland. So, Mark, you've been amongst the prestigious companies.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've actually worked with all three at some point or another, and Roger the most personally, because we worked in the Judiciary Committee. When I worked for Congressman Barney Frank, he was working for Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. He's very, very hardworking. And I know he's doing a terrific job for Maryland.
Well, Mark, I can only hope that you'll be running for office soon, and we'll be saying the Honorable Mark Levine is coming into gracing us with his presence.
Anything's possible, Garland. Yeah. Anything's possible.
Now, to our listeners, you're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM. You're listening to News Views. I will be on every week from 5 to 6 p.m., and we're going to have a great show. As you can tell by today, this is my first show, but as you can tell by today, we're going to have great guests. We're going to delve into the current newsworthy issues. We're going to talk about them, and we're going to put the people on the air who have their finger on the pulse. Now, that being said, as you know, WPFW is a listener-supported station. We certainly work hard to put out a good product, for lack of a better term, but to put out good, not just information, but good information, but information that is untainted. And in order to continue to do that, it's very expensive to keep this radio station going. We're going to ask that you call in and make a donation. Let me give you the number, 202-588-9739. That's 202-588-9739. And specifically, for this show, News Views is going to be on weekly, and certainly I'm going to need your support to help keep it going. So I ask you to call in, to make your donation on behalf of News View, on behalf of Mark, of myself and my panelist Mark here, and our prestigious guests that we'll be having on a regular basis.
Well, it's so important because, you know, we live in Washington, D.C., and I think because we live here, sometimes we forget the wealth of knowledge and great people that, you know, if you're living in Phoenix, Arizona, no disrespect to Phoenix, but you're unlikely to get members of Congress who come in. You and I both have personal relationships with a number of people on the Hill and with great progressives, people like Roger Mano in Maryland, and of course, Don Edwards. We've had her on before. I've worked with Chris Van Hollen in the past. So it's one of the things on News Views that we can do is bring in these people who are not just, you know, following the news, but making the news.
Right. Yeah, and we certainly need your help to stay on the air. And so I ask for your support of just $35. You've become a member of the station, but whatever you can donate, we would certainly be happy to accept it. And to I'm asking you for support for News Views. The phone numbers 1-800-222-9739. That's 1-800-222-9739. 202-588-9739. And there are a lot of options here at WPFW. You can call in with your credit card. It's drive time right now, and I'm sure a lot of people are driving up and down the road, and I'm sure there were a lot of very interested ears when they heard Chris Van Hollen, Don Edwards, etc. on here. But
we're going to have people like that back. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about this show. It's going to be not just the news, but the newsmakers.
Yeah, some of the things coming up. We're going to do a show on labor. We're going to have some true labor leaders here, and I mean not just your average person here within the labor movement. We're going to put some national leaders in the labor movement on this show. We're going to talk about the issues. Certainly, you know what's going on in Michigan right now. You know that if you're not familiar with it right now, the Michigan legislature and the Michigan governor are fighting hard to pass laws that would basically do away with, they call it right to work laws, that would basically do away with organized labor. Mark, you're a lawyer. Maybe you can explain right to work laws to our audience so they'll understand when they turn on the TV in the afternoon and they see this right to work laws. What are they talking about?
It's sort of a misnomer. It's the right to avoid paying union dues. Basically, what it is the way unions work, of course, is they give a benefit for everyone that belongs to that union, everyone that works in that industry, and frankly, even to people who work outside the industry, because unions raise wages not just for the union members, but for everyone there by keeping wages good. They also give us nice things like weekends. I always say, if you like the weekend, you like unions. If you hate your weekend, then maybe you hate unions. Overtime, worker safety. So unions do all these things. And some states say, you should be able to be in a union and not have to pay for it. Well, if you don't pay for a union, the union falls apart.
Right.
So when people vote to join a union, they have the union dues, you pay for it, and the union, I think, as just about anyone in a union would agree, pays you back far, far more than a little bit that you pay in dues, because you get higher wages, higher benefits, better working conditions, and so forth. Well, what the Michigan legislature is trying to do is they're trying to defund unions. They're trying to say to people, you can be in a union and not pay your union dues. And of course, then you have what economists call a free rider problem. It's like, oh, well, if I don't have to pay, I won't pay. And then suddenly no one pays, and lo and behold, you're not in a union, and your wages go down. And so this is a protection that, listen, if you vote to join a union, then you pay your dues. You don't have to be in a union, but once the group votes to join a union, then everyone pays their dues. And I think that's a good thing, because I think strong unions mean for strong workers and strong wages.
Well, there's certainly political motivation here also, isn't there, Mark? Because unions are probably the largest organized group outside of strictly political organizers. They're probably the largest group that goes out and works on behalf of the Democratic Party also, aren't they?
Well, that's true. And on behalf of working people. I mean, look at what's going on right now with Walmart. I mean, people are being paid very, very low wages, while the people who own Walmart collectively are the richest people in the world, if you add up the four descendants of Sam Walton together. And the people there are not getting health care. They're barely getting minimum wage. And so they're being forced to work on Thanksgiving, and they're going out, but they don't have a union because Walmart doesn't allow unions. And so, I feel for them, but there's very little that they can do because they don't have this union right. So if that's why, I mean, there are other places that do. I mean, Costco is terrific to its workers. There are other places that are good. Unions have been declining in America because of laws like this one in Michigan, because Republicans are hurting them. And we need to remember, harming unions doesn't just harm unionized workers. It harms all workers, because if there's no competition for higher wages, then people just bring us lower wages and outsource jobs to Mexico and China and places like that.
So I am sure that our listeners will really enjoy our show. And that's just a little teaser to let you know what you can look forward to here on News View. We're going to have organized labor, not just once. We're going to have certainly labor here on the occasion to discuss what's happening, so we can get the labor leaders to let us know what's going on in organized labor.
And people that are involved with climate change,
yeah,
and people that are involved with gun regulation, and people that are involved involved with crime. These are all these things that can happen on News Views. And again, we really could use your help in pledging 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. You can also pledge online if you're listening to us at home. You can't do that probably while you're driving, at www.wpfw.org.
Yeah, so I'm sure right now, particularly 5 of 6 in this area, there are a lot of people that are stuck in their cars that wish they weren't, but we'll certainly see the opportunity to listen to this show every Friday, and we need your support. If you enjoy the show, if you enjoy the content, and if you're looking forward to the types of shows that we'll be doing in the future, I ask you to make some kind of a donation. Of course, the more the merrier.
And we have a very, very generous donation. I'm not sure if I can read the name on the air or not.
Well, find out.
Where does it say whether we can read them on the air or not? This is very, very generous. But I didn't see the box check, so I don't want to. We'll find out if we can see his name.
Yes, but we certainly thank. So we see right now that we're going to have a pretty strong support. We can. Okay, great. Let's.
Apparently, we can say his name on the air. We double checked to be sure. I want to thank Calvin Bing, who is from Maryland, who has given us a very generous donation. Of course, this is good not just for News Views. This is very good for WPFW, which needs your help. We are the only listener-sponsored radio station in the Washington, D.C. area, and your pledge makes a difference.
202-588-9739. You want to keep News Views going. You want to hear what's going on. You want to hear the leaders, not just the local leaders, the leaders in this country. You turn on the major cable channels, and you get the big names. Well, you're going to turn on listener-supported radio, and you're going to be able to get that information. We're going to discuss that with them, and there'll be even times when we will open the phones, and we will give you an opportunity to call in.
Absolutely. Garland and I have both personal relationships with a lot of these people, and that's good, too, because you get to see a side of them that you might not see on your CNN or whatever. People who we've worked with, who we know, who we trust, people like the three people you had on the show today.
Yeah, next week we're going to have a great show. We're going to have some a number of people from some educational systems, and with us we are going to have the majority owner and co-CEO of Archie Comics, for those who've heard of Archie Comics, Archie Bedeker, Betty, Veronica, Nancy Silberkleit is the majority owner, and she is also the co-CEO of Archie Comics, which Archie Comics also owns other things, Sonic the Hedgehog.
And I think she's actually the first comic book that to feature same-sex marriage is Archie Comics. And that was her decision to make, a very brave decision. We talked to her
about
that.
And they actually have a comic book on bullying. For those of you have been keeping up with the news here, a few months ago there was a student of an African-American predominantly black college in Florida who died on a bus. He was a member of a band, and there was an hazing incident. Yeah. Hazing, bullying. So she has a comic book. We are likely to have some celebrities calling in. We'll probably be able to take some of your calls, so we'll have the co-CEO and majority owner of Archie Comics. For those of you who used to watch the old Archie's show back in the day, the old Saturday morning cartoons, that should be an enjoyable yet a serious show. 202-588-9739. The show is called News View.
Please contribute if you can. Again, any amount is welcome. $35 makes you a member, but any amount to show your support for WPFW and for Garland and me, we really would appreciate it.
Yes, we're going to be addressing issues, and we're going to keep current. There could be an issue that comes up during the week that's of significance, and if we see a significant issue, we're going to go to the people who are dealing with the meat of the issue, and we're going to get them on the air for you, and you're going to enjoy this show. I guarantee you.
Every Friday at 5 o'clock as you're driving home.
Yes, WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. Once again, 202-588-9739. That's 202-588-9739. And just because we didn't take callers today doesn't mean that we may on occasion take a caller here and there and allow our listeners to be a part of the show.
Absolutely. Right now we just need you to call in.
We certainly need you, and we certainly want to thank Calvin Bing, and we want to thank those out there who are going to call in.